Thank you for joining us today for the 19th episode of the Whitaker Report podcast, a discussion with thought leaders about the future of economic development, site selection, and corporate real estate. My name is Dean Whitaker, President and CEO of Whitaker Associates, a data analytic company serving the needs of economic development, commercial real estate, and other organizations. I will be your host as we endeavor to see what's next, to see around the corner. Today we'll be speaking with Andy Bass. Andy Bass is a longtime tech entrepreneur in West Michigan, having founded a variety of companies in the e-commerce and supply chain space over the past 30 years. He is the CEO of NetNerds Ventures, providing startup and technology strategies and software development services throughout Michigan. With a background in software as a service, engineering, internal IT, and systems integration, Andy has advised many companies throughout his career. Andy co-founded and serves as the Chief Technology Officer of Compoto, a currency platform that connects community members with local merchants and enables millions of dollars to be kept in the community each year. Prior to Compoto, Andy was the co-founder of Lean Logistics, now E2 Open, which developed and commercialized cloud-based transportation management software. His team created and supported a mission-critical supply chain platform used by Fortune 500 companies to process billions of dollars in their freight spending annually. Earlier in his career, Andy introduced thousands of users to the internet when he founded the Grand Rapids Freenet, the first internet service provider in West Michigan. Please join me as we welcome Andy Bass to the Whitaker Report podcast. Well, Andy, thank you very much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have this opportunity to talk with you about all this technology stuff that's going on in and around us. And you're obviously one of my go-to people whenever I want to know what's going on in some technology. I noticed when I asked you to send me a headshot, you sent me something rather unique, which was a AI-generated image. And can you tell us a little about that and how that came about?
Yeah. So, of course, AI has been in the news quite a bit recently with things like ChatGPT and other technologies, and it's becoming more of a prevalent aspect of technology. And along with that, there have been several AI generative applications, both from the ability to provide information, a description of a picture and have the computer create that picture, but also with profile images or avatars, the ability for an application to take in actual photos and then generate a set of images based upon those photos. And so for the one that I sent you, I used an application on my iPhone called Lensa, L-E-N-S-A. And that particular application, and there are several others like it, allow you to upload, typically they say between 10 and 20 selfies. And then it will generate anywhere between 20 and 100 different images based upon those selfies in various kinds of themes. So there's a superhero theme, and there's there's kind of a dark and mysterious theme, and they've got all these different ways of kind of depicting someone. And some of them are very good, and they're very accurate. It's like an artist recreated a drawing of you. And others are a little bit more esoteric and a little bit more unusual. They might put you in an astronaut suit, or they might just make you look very ethereal. But it's interesting to see how that technology is being applied, for sure. But that's what I used was an app called Lensa.
That's very cool. Well, our listeners will be able to see it if they go to our podcast. When they listen to the podcast, we'll use that as our introductory image of this conversation. So they'll be able to see your handiwork on Lensa, which is fun stuff. One of the things I wanted to ask you a little more about, though, and kind of keep us focused in this area, is this thing called Web3. We hear a lot of buzz about it, but What is it and how is it different from Web 2?
Well, Web 3 is, as you might imagine, is kind of the next version of what we think of specifically around the kind of the web and the web browsing experience. And so if you kind of rewind back to the beginning of the commercial internet, which was in the early 90s, before that, of course, the internet existed in governments and educational institutions, but commercially in the early 90s, when the first web browsers were being developed with the HTTP protocol, and really the first of those that really people were engaged with was Mosaic, which was written by Mark Andreessen out of University of Illinois Urbana, and that was a tool that basically allowed people to graphically and visually experience information for the first time. It was no longer kind of the text world and the terminal world of what we knew previously, and now we're kind of into this interesting way of depicting information with these hyperlinks. And if you, you know, for those that remember the early internet and the early days of the web, it was much different than what we know today. And it was really more of a read-only experience. So I think of Web 1 as a read-only experience where very soon after kind of the introduction of the browser, and as we got into the mid and late 90s, companies started using this technology to market their products and services. So you might see television commercials where I still remember distinctly where they would spell out the URL of their website, http://, and they would spell the whole thing out to direct people to their new website, which was very exciting for them. But it was all marketing. It was all read only. And that was really version one of the web. When we get into version two, which really was kind of started in the early 2000s and really continues through today. So there's no specific date of start and end for web one versus two versus three. It's this evolving process of new technologies as they're developed. And so when we got into Web 2, which I really consider to be kind of the read-write web, and version 2 was really about platforms. So if you think about the web applications and platforms of today, from social media, Twitter, Facebook, all of those, Instagram, all of those platforms and the applications that are also part of Web 2, think of Airbnb or any SaaS-based application. Those are all about reading and writing and creating value through a platform. And the biggest difference now between Web 2 and Web 3 is who owns and manages that data. So from a Web 2 perspective, when I read and write and I'm engaging with a social media platform like Facebook as an example, they own the information, right? I'm giving them my information and my data is what is being monetized. And that is how they're making money. They're monetizing my data and my information. With Web 3 now, it's really putting the power of that monetization and the control of a user's data back in their hands. And so you still have these applications and these platforms where users can realize value from engaging with an application online, but they have much more control over how that data is being used.
I understand. So there's a change of foot.
There is.
How does blockchain technology play a role in Web 3? Where does blockchain fit into the scheme of things?
Well, blockchain is really a foundational technology for Web 3. And the key to blockchain is, first of all, blockchains are not owned by a single entity. So this is where we start getting into the ability for users to have more control and to remove control from a single entity. So as opposed to my data being stored and managed on a, you know, again, on a Facebook server in a data center somewhere that's owned by Facebook, that's managed by Facebook and so forth. The blockchain is a distributed technology. So the blockchain exists, and there, again, there are a variety of different ones. So there isn't just a single blockchain, but blockchains exist in a distributed fashion on computers all over the world. And probably the best example that people might be familiar with is Bitcoin. As a cryptocurrency, and really the first cryptocurrency that that came out going on, you know, 12, 13 years ago now, that is a technology that is allowing for value exchange between individual parties through a very transparent mechanism, meaning that anyone can see any transaction on the blockchain. They don't necessarily know who the exact parties are, A and B, when sending or receiving money, but it's fully transparent and it's distributed across the entire world. And so there isn't a single company that owns Bitcoin, right? As opposed to maybe a banking network, which is, you know, traditionally how we think of monetary exchange when I'm using a credit card or those kinds of things, where everything is funneled through kind of a central clearinghouse. It's all around the world. It's all distributed. So blockchain technology, as it relates to Web3, blockchains are kind of the foundation on which Web3 applications and other technologies are built.
Very interesting. Speaking of Web3 and blockchain and some of the applications, what are some of the potential use cases for Web3 and this decentralized application idea?
Yeah, it's interesting to see where we're seeing applications being developed, and there are some very very obvious applications. I mentioned earlier Bitcoin and kind of exchange of value, and that is, you know, that is again the first one that kind of where everything started with blockchains and with Web3 tech was being able to create a cryptocurrency and exchange value, and that is a very simple application because, you know, essentially all you need is, you know, a sender, a receiver, and some value, and then the ability for the blockchain to kind of manage that information is very easy. What we're seeing as applications develop, we're seeing applications that are around monetary and value exchange. So if we think about transactions around real estate as an example, so, you know, the ability to manage title history on a blockchain, and the ability for funds to be transferred, information to be validated, such as ownership of property, those kinds of things, kind of tangential value exchange applications are another one of the big ones that we're seeing come out. Another is personal information. So the ability for an individual to store and have a single kind of existence of their personal information online for a variety of purposes, could be for healthcare. If you think about healthcare records and those kinds of things, if you think about voting, right, the ability to have a transparent and yet secure way of tracking people's voting records and looking at how that's going to evolve. These are things obviously that are not fully baked right now. These are evolving applications, but over time, we can see how leveraging the blockchain as a foundation and as a mechanism to store and move information in a distributed, secure, and transparent fashion can have great value to a variety of vertical industries. Supply chain is another one. the ability to be able to track goods and understand, you know, again, who has ownership and control over a particular aspect of a good within the supply chain. All of these are aspects of blockchain applications and Web3 applications that are being built today. We're in the same as the early days of the internet in the early to mid 90s, right? The ability for someone to get online and to interact with this new internet technology back in the 90s, it was brand new. It was a greenfield opportunity for people, and people had no idea what it was going to become. With Web3, we're in those same early days. We're in the days of trial and error. We're seeing a lot of churn in the market as it relates to crypto. And we can certainly talk more about that. We're seeing a lot of the same kinds of things that we see with these early markets, and which I believe is that, you know, what we're seeing today with crypto is a very good thing, because it's kind of pulling the bad stuff out of the market, and the market will return in a much stronger fashion with better, stronger players. But I think the where we're at now is going to be radically different than, you know, 10 years from now, even 5 years from now, when we look at Web3 and how Web3 is affecting our day-to-day interactions with things.
Mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying, and I would tend to agree. There's a book I'm reading called Power and Prediction, which is about AI. But they use the term in there, between times. And I think that's kind of what you're describing. We're kind of like between this and that. So we're in that flux period where we're just trying to begin to figure things out. Here's some of the challenges for this Web3 ecosystem. And what is it facing now? And how is the community working to address some of them?
Well, I think that there are a variety of challenges in different areas. So, and I'll talk to a few of those. So the first is blockchain technology, the foundational aspects of blockchain. I mentioned earlier that there are a variety of different blockchains out there, and probably the most popular ones. I mentioned Bitcoin, which is really the primary purpose is to exchange value between a sender and a recipient. The other really big one is called Ethereum, and Ethereum is a cryptocurrency, but also its own blockchain. And that blockchain has the ability to have, think of it like a way of storing logic and running a computer program on the blockchain itself. So more so than just the ability to store and forward information, there's actually logic built into the blockchain where developers can create applications within this Ethereum blockchain ecosystem. And there are a few others, blockchains as well, but Ethereum is probably the most interesting right now because of that kind of programmability of it. And one of the big challenges of blockchains in general, there are a couple. One is scalability. And that is because when someone is interacting with a blockchain, and when that blockchain needs to be updated, there's a process called mining. And there's a process that basically is updating the blockchain with new information, which is what this is. And traditionally with Bitcoin, it was a very brute force process, mining, and it was very energy inefficient. It took a tremendous amount of power, literal electrical power, to run the processors to do this mining. And mining is really about solving a puzzle is the best way to describe it in the way that Bitcoin does it. And so there is an issue with scalability because there's the blockchain needs to have all of the information a miner, and there might be multiple miners around the world, depending upon the blockchain. Those miners all have a copy of the blockchain themselves, of the entire blockchain. And when a blockchain is updated, when a new piece of information is added through the mining process, that has to be transmitted to all of the other miners around the world that are doing this. Mm. And so the value of distributed processing has to be kind of is partially offset by, you know, managing the scalability of it. And so that was one of the early challenges, was the ability to, you know, how do you kind of keep everything in sync, and you have all these different participants in this distributed network. And that has to be something that is, you know, continually addressed. So that's kind of one challenge. And I mentioned the other challenge related to kind of just the energy inefficiency of it. Now that's been addressed through new mining techniques. The initial technique was called proof of work, and that's still used by Bitcoin, and was used by Ethereum up until last year. And now the proof of work with Ethereum has been changed and transitioned to something called proof of stake. And proof of stake is really all about people allocating a portion of their cryptocurrency, of Ethereum in this case, to help in the algorithm to decide who is going to be the one to add the information to the blockchain, right? So if I have 1,000 miners out there, all with copies of the Ethereum blockchain, and they all want to be able to add the new, they want the ability to add the new piece of information, and only one of them can do it. The way that some of that is determined now, as opposed to solving a puzzle, is more about how much Ethereum have they staked, right? Think about, you know, gambling and playing cards. How much am I staking to participate in this process? So, and because we've changed the way that identifier of who is going to add to the blockchain, we've reduced now the amount of energy that is required to further that process. So no longer is there this extremely energy inefficient processor dependent puzzle that's being solved. It's much more efficient to do it in this new way. So the energy efficiency is another aspect. The third one that I'll mention is really around user experience. And so today, when you want to engage with one of these Web2 platforms, you create your user ID and your password, and you're into the system. And that's great. That works well. There's continual technology, you know, evolving there related to password management and all that good stuff. With Web3, it's a little bit different. So when you want to connect to a Web3 application, you have to have a wallet with a way to identify yourself. And so this wallet is something that lives locally on your computer or in your browser, and allows you to quote unquote sign a transaction to validate that you are who you say you are. And the ability to have a wallet, to set it up, to understand how it works, all of these can be barriers to entry to the broader general public adopting some of these Web3 technologies. This same wallet is what is used to purchase and store cryptocurrency. So it might be that certain websites are going to require you to pay for value. If you're paying for a service or what have you, you need to have the appropriate kind of cryptocurrency in that wallet to be able to use that application. And so that requires you to know, understand how to purchase cryptocurrency and store it in your wallet and understand the right one to use. So there's a lot around that, you know, kind of that the user experience and the onboarding process to get someone into this Web3 ecosystem that will take some time to kind of remove the friction, so to speak, from that process. I think, you know, every year that goes by, the user experience has improved. The developer tools have improved. There's new ways of doing things that will make it easier. But just as with anything else, it's new and different and requires some new knowledge and new learning to be able to get into it and understand it. And so that's really the other kind of big one to me in terms of challenge is really improving the onboarding and user mm-hmm. experience with these new applications.
How do you see the Web3 technology evolving in the future? And what kind of impact do you think that will have on various industries?
Well, I think, as I mentioned, we're early days yet in terms of some of this Web3 technology. So it's going to be evolving very quickly over the next 5 to 10 years. And I think, you know, every big company, you think about in our area, you know, think about the Steelcases and the Herman Millers and the Myers of the world and all, you know, big corporate entities they might have innovation departments, they might have, you know, new technology groups that are looking at ways of furthering their business. What's the next set of technologies that, you know, that they're going to be engaged with? And Web3 and Web3's kind of family of technologies is definitely on that list, and they're definitely exploring these things. And I think it will be, in many ways, it will follow some of what we saw with the internet, the early days of the internet and web version one. So one of the more popular Web3 technologies today that is built on blockchain are called NFTs. And NFTs, you can basically think of them as NFT stands for non-fungible token. And the idea behind it is I could have an NFT that represents a piece of digital art, which was kind of the way it started, right? You have these kind of digital pieces of artwork online that were all NFTs and they had a value associated with them. Which is interesting. It's a collectible, right? It's a bit like a baseball card, as an example, a digital baseball card. But as you see companies evolving into this and looking at, well, what does an NFT mean to me in the world of Web3? It might be a physical product, right? It might be a chair from Herman Miller. It might be, it might be a beer from New Holland. It might be, a specialized whiskey that's being developed that, you know, gives you with NFTs, if you have a product that's tied to an NFT, typically the NFT gives you greater access to something or utility as it's known. You get greater utility related to the product that you've just purchased. So that product, if you think about it today, products have serial numbers. And you can kind of think of an NFT as like a digital serial number that uniquely identifies that product online. And but if you then can take your digital serial number back to the manufacturer and say, hey, I own this product and I can prove that I own it because you can see on the blockchain has that record of my ownership of it. Maybe I have access to other people that own that product, or I have the ability to have a conversation with some of the people that created that product. But only I can do that because I have the ownership of it and I can prove that ownership. So this ability to take NFT to create a product, make an NFT out of that product and put that on the blockchain so people can acquire it and prove ownership and then create utility around that is kind of what we're seeing now with a lot of companies from a marketing perspective, right? Again, it's the ability to say, hey, I own this product. And now because I own this product, I get special access around various things. Maybe there's a meetup or I can, you know, connect at a coffee shop with a group of people that own this product and we can verify that we're the ones that own it. That's really the first thing. As time goes on, we're going to see more and more of the evolution of that, of digital ownership and proof of ownership and utility around that proof. We're also going to see, as I mentioned earlier, within these vertical markets of of healthcare or identity, the ability for individuals and organizations for that matter, but individuals primarily, to say, hey, this is who I am, this is my information, and this is what I'm allowing to provide to other entities. So if Spectrum Health wants to be able to engage with me and know about me as an individual, or some other organization wants to know about me, instead of basically just gathering my information from somewhere, I will have the ability to give them permission. They'll be able to ask me for access to my personal information, and based upon my interest in that organization, I can elect to provide it to them or not. And that provision is occurring electronically through a blockchain, because all of my data is stored securely on the blockchain, and I have the ability to allow or disallow even individual pieces of that information to be made available and visible and accessible to other organizations.
Fascinating stuff. We've seen recently the use of AI in generating different applications, much like your image or some text related. How do you see AI playing in this Web3 space? Where does it fit into that?
Yeah, I think, AI, if we think about AI and Web3, it's kind of like a Venn diagram to a degree, right? So you have AI as its own thing and will continue to evolve, and you have Web3 as its own thing, and then you have that intersection of them. And I think that, what we're seeing with AI right now, and obviously AI has been around for a long time, we're seeing a resurgence of it over this past year or so, with some of these new tools like Lensa or ChatGPT and so forth. And I think what we're seeing is an integration of AI into kind of everything else. And now I'm seeing applications that I use on a regular basis now integrating these AI tools into them. And I think the Web3, what we'll see first is, Web3 technology as if you think about it as a generic web application, right, regardless of a particular vertical or industry, we will see that the integration of these APIs and SDKs for allowing users to have conversations with this application, to ask it questions and to have it provide relevant answers to its own knowledge base. I think that's going to be the first thing, because we're seeing that already in web version 2 applications today. And I think that kind of Venn diagram overlap, not only with AI and Web3, but AI and other technologies, that combination will become stronger and stronger. There'll be more and more overlap, where I think, 5 to 10 years from now, whether you're looking at a Web2 platform or a Web3 platform, you're going to see a tremendous amount of artificial intelligence built into it. And you're not even going to necessarily know that it's there, right? AI is one of these things that is right now is very interesting and unique. And there's a lot of challenges understanding what does it mean for various industries. What does ChatGPT mean for the educational field, right? For academia, and other areas. Over time, those issues will fall away to a degree. And we'll have this integration of AI into everything, and we won't necessarily know that it's there, or will we care, right? Because it's a technology that's going to create value for us within the application that we need. It might be, if you think about from a travel perspective, right? I'm having trouble scheduling my flight, or I'm looking for flights between these areas. Maybe I just ask it a question, right? So instead of going to a travel website and putting in all these parameters and looking at different flight legs of where I want to go and what the options are, I just go to the airline and ask a question. Hey, do you guys fly here and how much is it? And it comes back and gives me that information. Or I go to an aggregator travel site and I ask it the same thing. Hey, this is what I want to do. I want to go on vacation to London. What flights and hotels should I think about? And have it come back with this knowledge base of all the information that it has gathered through engagement with a variety of data platforms and individual mm-hmm. users to come back and tell me what I should be doing, right? And so, and that's going to become commonplace, and that's going to become very natural, I think to us. It's unnatural now, but it will become more natural over time.
So we'll begin to expect the referral system that gives us, if you like this, you're going to like this even
exactly.
better.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you think about the personalization and kind of the way that that ads are pushed to us now, right, based upon how we engage with various pieces of data, it will become even better. You know, what we see with, I think what's interesting is, if you look at ChatGPT, I will tell you as an aside, ChatGPT is what generated these questions for us today. Because I asked it, give me the top five questions for a podcast on Web3, an introductory podcast on Web3.
Very cool.
And so these are the questions it came up with. So I blame the technology. But anyway, what we'll see is more incorporation of data, right? Much like we see with search engines. I think OpenAI is the next Google, right? So OpenAI is the maker of ChatGPT, and another tool called WALL-E, which is a great image tool. But if you go to openai.com, they've got some great kind of experimental tools there to kind of expose people to the world of AI. But I think that company is the next Google. And what we will see, not only with companies like OpenAI, but with kind of this entire industry, is much the ability for you to, over time, your own information and your own data will become part of these things. And so I can envision a day where you could be, engaging with one of these chatbots online, and you could be saying things like, what did I do on September 23rd of 1997? And it can go back and tell you, right? It through the data that it knows about, and not only about you, but about what else was happening with other people in your family, those kinds of things. I can see a day where that kind of data is made available to you through these kinds of interfaces and through these kinds of technologies. I think it's wonderfully interesting, but extremely scary. Right, with the way that some of this stuff is evolving, and I think it will be fun to see, what does it look like in 10 years, in 20 years, with all of this. If we look back at 1994, and we come up on 30 years later, what is that? What does the internet look like? Well, it's radically different than 94. What will this new AI world, and what will this new Web3 world look like in 20, 30 years? I think it'll be amazing.
Well, Andy, this has been a wonderful conversation, and we could go on for all day.
We could.
And so I want to just say thank you for giving us a glimpse into the future and for your insight, which is very helpful as we prepare to move forward in 2023. So thank you for your conversation today, Andy, and your willingness to share with us some of your insights.
Absolutely. It's been great chatting.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Whitaker Report podcast. Stick around corners, and a special thanks to Andy Bass for helping us better understand the rapid changes taking place in the application of information technology.